From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Tuesday morning to you. Thank you for joining us. We always do appreciate it. You want to get in touch with the program, text line's wide open, 251-343-0106. Hit me up there, and we will respond to most of what you got to say, except for any profanity-laced text from Joel will be ignored and probably blocked soon. And, Ricky, you're still banned from the program. Coming up on the program today, from the 2nd Congressional District, running for that seat, she's a GOP nominee, Carolee Dobson, about a half hour from now. Paul DeMarco going to get with us in the 10 o'clock hour. A few things on the docket there. If you're keeping up, some of you legal nerds out there, kind of a fascinating thing. So when Alabama passed its gender therapy for minors ban, where, you know, no hormone treatment for the kiddos. Kiddos wanting to undergo some kind of transition. They banned that, and of course the usual suspects on the left sued. Well, Lyles Burke is a federal judge from North Alabama. They didn't want it in his court. They wanted it more favorable, probably Obama, Clinton, or whatever appointee to adjudicate over that trial. And Burke is it landed in Burke's court, and who I thought was, you know, at least open-minded about the challenge to the hormone therapy ban, but he says. Lyles Burke says that they were judge shopping him, and he's reprimanding them. Paul DeMarco understands it a lot better than some people. We'll talk about that with him, among other things, coming up at the 10 o'clock hour. And then finally, it's Wednesday, so we talked to John Wall, chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, kind of an update. It's election cycle time, and okay, so here we go. And Fox News is just hammering these videos of President Biden stumbling and just looking so out of it. Claiming some of these videos are deep fakes. They are in trouble. They finally realized this inside Biden HQ. In 2016, do you guys remember at the 9/11 memorial and Hillary Clinton stumble? Do you guys remember that? That hurt her. That hurt her bigly. This video of Obama with his hand on Biden's back, and they're kind of walking off stage here, and he looks just absolutely out of it. And then obviously the weird Normandy paratrooper episode. I mean, and Fox News showed them over and over and over and over again. And then the White House does something completely stupid and gives Fox News a reason to show them over and over again a few more days by saying they're fake or AI generated. They won't say this. They're in trouble. They're in trouble, guys. Now, Trump's convictions in some of the polling is starting to show, but they had to. We'll talk about that in a second. That's a headwind for Trump. I would argue this is a bigger headwind for Joe Biden because people see that. They're just like, he's not really. He's not fit to be president. No, we've been saying that forever. However, I don't think they're going to replace him on the ticket, as some of you may think they will. He raised a bunch of money at the sad event. And be like, well, Obama and Hollywood raised that money. No, they wrote the checks to Joe Biden, though, guys. Now they're running a $50 million ad by hitting President Trump nationally with the convicted felon stuff. But these videos of Joe Biden looking out of it, you start running those nationally. Woo! Telling you guys, that's going to leave a mark. There's a lot of swing states where Biden's way down. He should be up. And when we talk about the polling showing up here, so I've seen a few polls, and they really, really have to target the convicted felon stuff. If they just say Biden versus Trump, who you got, Trump still does pretty well, but they have to really drill down. Well, now that Trump's a convicted felon with 32 counts and blah, 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 how do you feel about him? And they really had to go into it and explain it to in the survey to get the response they want, because people just aren't up on it. I think it's become white noise to the most of the public here, because Trump seems like he's always in court, always in trouble, something's always going on, or there's something, they're always trying to get that guy, right? He's always, he never goes to jail. I don't understand it. So I think there's something to this. Y'all kind of like, let me know what you think, but to me, this video is a pretty good indicator of problems over there. What else? Well, the Attorney General Steve Marshall, I think with a dozen or so maybe other attorneys general, they're trying to shut down the president from talking about the Mar-a-Lago raid. The Biden DOJ is. They're trying to put a gag order on this whole 20. Remember how outraged people were about the raid on his Mar-a-Lago for the documents? And we're having a big fight in court right now. Biden DOJ wants to shut that down, but part of Trump's platform, why he's running, is, well, the DOJ is out of control. Look, they raided a former president's home with guns drawn. And in that document, they had the protocol where they would use lethal force if needed. Well, that's just what we do all the time, guys. Nothing to see here. And I would think, like, if you're running for president and part of your entire spiel is, hey, the deep state is out of control, then this needs to be out there and he needs to be talking about it. So Marshall and these other attorneys general have filed a brief opposing the gag order, the potential gag order. It would be remarkable. They might get away with it in D.C. I don't think they'll get away with it in Florida, the Southern District down there. It's a Trump-appointed judge. But it shows you how far things are kind of, how overly politicized they are. So what's going on here in Alabama? Mildly intriguing, I would say. But we're trying to figure out something. One of my colleagues last night, when the dominoes are going to start falling in Alabama. And what you have is KIV's term limited, so she can't run again. She's not going to run again. You got Ainsworth looking to be the heir apparent. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. Could someone else come along and unseat Ainsworth? Not quite there yet. But what's going to happen to Steve Marshall? People forget this. Calvi's going to be the longest consecutive serving governor in Alabama history because Billy leaving midterm in 2017. So she gets almost all of 2017, almost all of 2018. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, and 20, into 26, into 27. Steve Marshall will have been there just as long, by the way. If you recall, go back even further, Bentley appointed Marshall to be Attorney General. He was Attorney General before Ainsworth was still in the House of Representatives. Marshall was Attorney General, has been Attorney General, the longest-serving Attorney General in Alabama history. Does that count for something? But how about this? You see these things from Steve Marshall right now pertaining to Trump. Now, look, he's not alone. There's a bunch of other AGs out there doing the same thing. Would Steve Marshall be in the Trump administration someday? So it's silly season right now. We're trying to figure out where all these parts and pieces are going to go headed into 26. You're starting to hear the buzz. Who's going to run for what? Who's going to run for governor? Just talk about Rick Pate, our ag commissioner, running for either lieutenant governor or governor. Greg Reed, the pro tem in the Senate, maybe running for lieutenant governor. And as ceremonial as the lieutenant governorship could be, it's still a very important office. Who would be a good lieutenant governor for Alabama? Yeah, these are the things we talk about in our spare time. But right now, I know we still got 24 there, but you want to start running for, especially if you're running for governor, you got to kind of start now figuring out how you're going to do it. And then you just, especially in the state where you have low turnout and it's all about name ID, you just start traveling the state. The template is Katie Britt. All 67 counties, even though you have no chance of winning Sumter County or Perry County, you do something there anyway. It's a Republican primary, and you just keep going. And now here's the stage. You know, you're getting ready for that. A lot. We'll see how things go in the November election. And I know, like, if Trump wins, then 2026 nationally will be a Democrat year, one would think. Typically how it goes. If Trump loses, 2026 will be a big Republican year. If Biden is reelected president, the status quo Republican Party in Alabama is in big trouble. That's where you get these Tea Party phenomenon elections, and the right tends to get more energized and involved. And you know, it's you go from 16-17% turnout to 35% turnout or something in a cycle like that, which doesn't seem as significant, but it's who the voters are and where they are coming from. Now, this was true in 2010, but you saw Robert Bentley kind of sneak in there with Bradley Byrne and then ultimately win the nomination. That was a weird year. We can talk more about that or anything else that's on your mind. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the
time. Welcome back to the Jump Poor Shoulder for Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Tuesday morning, 251-343-0106. 0106 is the text line. That's how you get in touch with me, your show host. Back to what we were talking about. I think this video of Joe Biden kind of wandering out there is starting to do some damage. You're seeing these guys play both sides of it here. The White House to try its usual don't believe your lying eyes. Maybe that works when we're having some kind of philosophical debate or some kind of weird, like something going on in Congress. Presidential politics, when people are kind of tuning in, not going to work. I would not be surprised if this does not show up in the polling soon, especially the way it's getting played over and over again. But that's what you're seeing here. Also, this is important, and you need to watch out what's going on here up in Virginia. Bob Good, who's the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, is in trouble. So this is really important, kind of internal Civil War Republican Party stuff. And Bob Good is, he's got a primary challenger who McCarthy is backing and Trump World is backing. Now, why is Trump World backing him? Bob Good endorsed Ron DeSantis for president. And obviously McCarthy is against it because he voted down McCarthy every time he ran for speaker. Bob Good was locked in. So he is like in a real, real fight in Virginia right now. This could trigger some other things. Now look, Kevin McCarthy lost his speakership, resigns from Congress, and then a few days later launches like his own PAC, his own political arm. He's on Fox News once a day, the former House Speaker. He's raising money, and he's taking on the opponents, the people who voted against him. But he is losing. He took on Nancy Mace in South Carolina. She had the biggest election win in a primary she's ever had, she said, despite the amount of money that Kevin McCarthy and his allies are pumping into that race. So he's not doing... This Bob Good stuff tonight in Virginia is going to be really telling. So I think the establishment is on the ropes. Watch this tonight up in Virginia. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Because this would be a big win for those guys. And in addition to that, I mean, the Trump team is sort of backing Bob Good's opponent. It's just about beating the House Freedom Caucus. Some of these guys are obsessed with beating the House Freedom Caucus because of the turmoil they've caused since Republicans took over. Matt Gaetz is another one. Watch how this plays itself out. I got a few texts here, not too many. Sean Sullivan for Lieutenant Governor for Mr. Plunt. Tim, Jeff, they need to get the Biden videos out where people can see that who don't watch Fox News. You're right. It's got to be part of an ad. I kind of wonder this. So the White House, Jean-Pierre is the spokeswoman for the White House. They are saying these are deep fakes. These aren't real. These are surreptitiously edited videos or something. Are they trying to poison the well to keep the Trump campaign, Tim, from running these in any commercial? It's a disinformation Russian propaganda, and it's worked for them. It worked for them with the Hunter Biden laptop. Are you seeing this to try to create a Hunter Biden laptop situation to keep these off any kind of advertising with the Biden wandering videos off of the airwaves? I think you are. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jump Force Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Still to come in about an hour from now, Paul DeMarco, a friend from up in Birmingham, and then John Wall, chairman of the Republican Party, as we do every Tuesday. That's coming up, like I said, in that 11 o'clock hour. So please stay tuned. In the meantime, we got a bunch of texts to get to, 251-343-0106. We will get to those in short order. But joining us now on the line, she's Republican nominee for the 2nd Congressional District, that contest against Shamari Figures in November. But Carolee Dobson joining us once again. Carolee, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for coming on. Well, since we last spoke, I mean, you've had kind of a whirlwind. You got on Fox News. You got the Speaker of the House to endorse you. Give us kind of a progress report on how things are going.
Yes, no, it's been an exciting few weeks. A lot of hard work and time on the road, but I'm very grateful for the support, not only of the Republican Alabama delegation, but from congressional members throughout the country. They're recognizing that this is a winnable race and that it is worth, you know, us all kind of galvanizing to really fight the fight to ensure that we maintain control of the House. There are several swing districts throughout the country. And just because Alabama itself is not a swing state doesn't mean that there aren't swing districts like this one. So it's incredibly important that we fight tooth and nail to keep this seat Republican. Again, not only to ensure that the folks in District 2 have an advocate for conservative values and to fight to undo all the harm that the Biden administration has caused our nation in the past 4 years, but also, again, kind of on a greater scale to ensure that we maintain control of the House and hopefully grow our majority.
It sounds like to me, though, that we were worried about this initially all throughout, that national Republicans would be convinced that this isn't a winnable seat, and they would say we need to just kind of stay away from this one. They'll spend our resources elsewhere. That hasn't been the case at all so far this cycle, has it?
No. Again, I think, of course, the mainstream media back in October, November was very quick to try to label this as a unequivocal Democrat seat that it, you know, was in the blue column without question. But polling indicates otherwise. The March 5th primary, where there was just a 161 vote difference between overall turnout of both parties, indicates otherwise. And folks nationally, you know, whether it's the Speaker or congressional leaders kind of throughout all the country, Senator Tom Cotton has endorsed me. So, you know, we've gotten a lot of support throughout the country from folks that are wanting to ensure that Republicans are aware that this is a winnable seat, but we've got to fight for it.
And I mean, you have essentially done that, right? I mean, it's been every day since you wrapped up the nomination.
Yes, no, I've definitely been advocating for the, you know, the attention to this race because, Congresswoman Stefanik, who has endorsed me and been such a supporter and advocate, she herself said that this had been sort of a sleeper race. And again, people don't necessarily look to, you know, they think swing district, they think Pennsylvania, they think California. But this is an exciting race, and this race in District 2 could determine control of the House. So there is going to be a lot of, there is and should be a lot of national media attention, and I'm grateful for that. And again, grateful for advocates like Congresswoman Stefanik, like Congressman August Pfluger out in West Texas. Folks throughout the country have really stepped up to get behind me, you know, encourage me and again, draw attention to this race and how important it is.
And it's really, I imagine, you know, obviously you have an opponent and he is tied to the Biden administration. He's tied to the Biden DOJ. you're really kind of running against that, right? It's the status quo there is what's got to be fixed in Washington, D.C.
Yes. My opponent, you know, was part of the Obama administration and then was a deputy to Merrick Garland, which I think we're, kind of daily seeing the, I guess, interconnectivity between the Biden DOJ and, some of these lawfare proponents against Donald Trump. I think Breitbart actually had a story that was broke a couple of days ago about the third ranking Department of Justice official quitting just days after Trump announced his 2024 run. So we see, again, the kind of interwovenness of the Biden DOJ with some of the miscarriage of justice, especially with respect to President Trump. And I think that's concerning.
Yeah, your colleague Bradley, I mean, your former high school classmate, right. Bradley J. there with a story. But, Caroline, Shamari Fingers is tied to that. I mean, like, he has to own that. That is his. I mean, you look at his resume, and I'm not going to deny, I mean, he's got an impressive resume working for presidential administrations and whatnot, but not all that's good, what went on there. I mean, he has to, like, own a part of that, at least, I would think.
Yes, certainly. And again, just, you know, kind of the fact that he has not lived in the district since he went off to University of Alabama for undergrad and law school, hasn't lived in the state really since he went to work for the Obama administration. I also lived out of state. I went to college and law school out of state. My first few years of practicing were out of state. But, you know, I made a conscious decision. I took a pay cut 5 years ago because I wanted to raise my kids in Alabama. And so my husband and I moved back to Alabama just a couple months before my first child was born. But she was born in Alabama. And we moved back here because I wanted to raise my kids with Alabama values. I care about Alabama. I love Alabama. And I wanted to help to make it better. I didn't know, you know, in what way that would be, whether in the private sector, in public service. But we've been back here for 5 years. I could have never foreseen, that the districts would be redrawn, that there would be an opportunity for me to publicly serve the state. Whereas, again, you could kind of look, Shamari certainly has a very impressive resume. I know that he is hardworking. But the facts are that he's been in D.C. and he resigned his job to run for this race, moved back to the district to run for this race. And so I think you kind of have to look at motivating factors too, and why someone's running. I think that's very important in choosing your candidate as well.
Joined by Caroline Dobson. She is the Republican nominee for Alabama's 2nd Congressional District. Her contest against Shamari Fingers later this year in November on the general election ballot. Caroline, I got to still imagine, though, when you're out and about, it's still immigration. And that has to be, like, what's front and center. But let's talk about that. You get into office, what's the direction we need to do? When Trump first got into office, or when he was running, the left got into their hysterics, as they usually do at 16, about deportation squads and that. But I think the American people right now are saying, hey, we need to start looking at deporting those who are here illegally. It's not it's not taboo, maybe, as they are trying to make it out to be.
Yes. No, I mean, the fact is there are an estimated 8 to 10 million illegal aliens that have come across the border due to Biden's open border policy since Biden was sworn in. And so that number of just the sheer number without even, you know, addressing the drugs and the crime and, you know, who might be terrorist cells or, you know, it just the sheer number is going to cause our social services, which are already strained, to totally dry up. So we have got to, we certainly have to kind of eliminate this sanctuary city mentality. I mean, if there's an illegal alien that commits a crime of any kind, you know, they or is apprehended, they need to be deported. And then again, you know, unfortunately, the Biden administration has continued to implement these migrant worker programs in an overly bureaucratic manner, in such a way that it's far more likely for an American farmer or an American business owner who's trying to utilize the migrant worker program, trying to follow the rules, it's more likely for them to be slapped on the hand by the Biden administration than it is for an illegal alien who commits a crime to actually be deported. And so we've got to fix that. You know, it is undeniable that there are jobs that Americans won't do anymore. And so we've got to figure out a way to streamline that process, but at the same time, secure our borders and make sure that, you know, any apprehended person who comes here illegally is deported, and also have to ensure that those folks are not registered to vote, which I saw recently. You know, Wes Allen was kind of sounding the alarm about Democrats trying to register illegal aliens to vote. That is certainly very concerning.
And these half measures by the Biden administration, I suspect there will be more. That's what they are. They're just campaign gesturing, trying to appear to be proactive, but kind of played it both ways.
Mm-hmm. No, certainly. I think we're seeing a lot of that. The Biden administration, obviously very concerned about November, and so trying to kind of garner votes when and where they can. You see that with some of the regulations that are coming out of the Biden administration. For instance, they have put incredibly onerous regulations on nursing homes, for instance, all in an attempt to try to garner the support of some nursing unions. But it's estimated that these new nursing home regulations, which there are so many nursing homes throughout the district, and they serve such an important role, especially in a lot of our small towns and rural communities, it's estimated that the Biden administration's nursing home regulations will cost the average nursing home facility an additional $300,000 a year to comply. So it's going to force nursing homes out of business. Again, you look at these small towns, they're disproportionately elderly, and as far as kind of the demographics, and nursing homes are such an important way of ensuring that our elderly can receive the care that they need and also remain in the communities that they've contributed to their whole lives, where their kids and family are. So again, you know, but all that's the Biden administration, all in an attempt to try to woo a certain sector of voters, because his polling is abysmal and increasingly so daily.
Well, it underscores this point to me and everything you're talking about. We know Alabama's going to go for Trump. We know it's going to be Republican. And we don't, I mean, we're still, obviously, you're having to battle it out for your seat. But keeping Congress and winning as many Republican seats in Congress as possible is the hedge in case you do get a Biden second term. Because a Biden second term, Carolina, there's the midterm in 26, but I think you start to kind of see the tether snap, and they're going to do a lot more, given that he's in office four more years, and you got to have Congress and other checks on that potential there.
Yes, no. Well, and I mean, I think the reality is a Biden second term would ultimately be a Harris term. And I think just given the age of both candidates, President Trump just celebrated a birthday, and he seems to be in great, amazingly great shape, but he's 78. And, Biden's in his 80s. So I think we're also going to really see the vice, or it should be that the public also looks very long and hard at the vice presidential candidates, because frankly, I don't think they've ever been more significant in a race. And, you know, in some races, it's kind of a non-event. But again, I think just given the age of both candidates, the VP candidates are really important too. It's really important that voters consider them.
Yeah. And that is, should be that always, but given, I think particularly Biden and him stumbling around out there.
sure.
I mean, that's kind of bother a lot of people. And now the White House is like in CYA mode here, saying that it's out of context or it's faked or whatever. But that right there, even more so, Trump seems to have all his wits about him. There's clearly something going on there.
Right. Well, I mean, when he, by his own counsel, is not competent to stand trial, and yet he is our commander in chief, who would, you know, be entering into treaties on behalf of our nation, you know, leading our troops. It's terrifying. And at this point, I don't see how a Democrat can actually, you know, continue the fantasy that Biden is remotely competent.
Carolina, we're almost out of time here, but before we let you go, folks want to get involved with your campaign, help out. It's going to be real close down to the wire, so this is an important seat. Tell them how they can learn more.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jeff, and I'm so humbled by the support thus far. I just want to thank everyone who's voted for me, put up a yard sign, prayed for me. Please continue to do that. Certainly, of course, also would value your support because this is going to be an expensive race, and the Democrats are going to pour in a ton of money. There's no replacing hard work, and I know that I will outwork my opponent, but it still does cost money to run ads and get up on billboards. So would appreciate anything you're willing to contribute, or any word of mouth, or again, of course, prayers mean the most. We have, our website is Dobson for Congress. That's D-O-B as in Bravo, S-O-N-F-O-R, Congress.com. And then we are also on X, Instagram, Facebook, and Truth Social, Dobson for Congress.
Carolee, we appreciate your time, and we'll talk again.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You do the same. All right, guys, we'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck.
I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line if you want to be in touch with the program. Hit me up. Comment, complaint, suggestion, whatever it may be. A couple outstanding questions here. And I kind of little premature here talking about 26, but it seems to be in a lot of people's mind in my circles. Lieutenant Governor, if Ainsworth goes on to run for governor, assuming Marshall does too, or he goes to work for Trump, who's a good lieutenant governor? Who takes that office and does what Ainsworth sort of did with it? Maybe you don't like that. Maybe you do. In the meantime, we're still Veep Steaks. New York Post had a big piece about the vice presidential, Republican vice presidential ticket right now. It seems to be leaning with them, for them, Doug Burgum and Marco Rubio, very down on J.D. Vance. There's a real fight within Trump world over this. And I know this because I know that the different parts of Trump world are lobbying, are out pushing. Like you'll hear from Don Jr. world. You'll hear from Susie Wiles world. I don't personally, but as an observer, they're all trying to influence this process within. It's kind of crazy. And I hope this isn't an omen for the second Trump term, because the first Trump term was marred by all this internal strife within the White House. I mean, it started really rocky with Bannon and Miller. And over time, it worked itself out, but there was just so much bad PR. This is what you need to be thinking about here is how do they stop that? I mean, he gets elected again, and you think that is your problems are solved, but you have so many outside influences trying to get a seat at the table, fighting over it, and it gets ugly. All these sharp elbows. Hopefully, they take care of some of that if he does win again. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 1065.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Tuesday morning to you. Thank you for listening. We do appreciate it. Text line will be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. Paul DeMarco coming up in about an hour and a half. John Wall, Alabama Republican Party chairman. So a lot of reasons for you to stay tuned. Keep it right there. We have a bunch of texts to get to. As promised, I will begin to chip away at them. The difference between a puppy and a Republican is the puppy eventually stops whining. And that's dumb. Did you see that on a bumper sticker at Wenzel's or something there on Name Texture? That's do better. Gene, Steve, wanting to follow in Sessions' footsteps sounds like political suicide. Maybe. I don't think it's political suicide. Would Jeff Sessions have turned down the attorney general spot? Would anybody? Here's the problem, Gene, and I know where you're coming from, but this is different. Donald Trump has a bad track record with Alabama attorneys general. You mentioned Sessions. Luther Strange? Ring a bell? He endorsed Luther Strange in 2017. Went hard for Luther. Tried to curry favor, by the way, with Mitch McConnell, who has done nothing but obstruct and oppose Donald Trump his entire time he's been in public service. And we got Roy Moore, and then we ultimately got Doug Jones. The establishment is bad at picking candidates. Martin, did you notice when they gathered Joe back into the group, he immediately put on his dark sunglasses, probably so no one could see his stupid, confused look on his face. Why are we're being told to ignore this? Remember, this is exactly what they did with the Hunter Biden laptop. The media are playing along here. Now, and when the Hunter Biden laptop came out, remember all of the deep state officials signing a letter and it making like the front page of the Atlantic or whatever. This is nothing but a deep fake from Russia, Vladimir Putin trying to run our presidential elections. 3.5 years later, it's being in the same laptop that we were told was not official and it was fake. And they had to shut all the New York Post stuff down on Twitter and Facebook. No apologies, by the way, about that. That Twitter Files series that Elon Musk did with Barry Weiss and, I can't think of his name, the other journalist, where they showed the people within the company at Twitter, now X, colluding with the federal government to censor. which is an act of censorship, which is an act of the violating the First Amendment. I mean, like, I think there's grounds for a case there. I mean, it would be essentially this. If a presidential administration leaned on a company to discriminate, the DOJ Civil Rights Division would be there so fast. And in the middle of this, going after the administration, go after that company for being an accomplice. When an administration or when a deep state or whatever you want to call it does the same thing, and then this all happened during Trump, goes in and plays ball and tells, especially during COVID, tells these tech companies, hey, it's in your best interest not to let tweets or let this quote-unquote disinformation through. How is that any different? Well, that's discrimination. The First Amendment is just kind of like nice to have. 251-343-0106. But back to Joe Biden. This is what they're doing. They're trying to make this to appear, Martin. No, believe your lying eyes. It's just Republican trickery, strategery. Now, thankfully, Fox News is sort of like thumbing its nose. After the 2020 election, I was really worried about where Fox News was headed. Those of you who are Fox News viewers, if you're still Fox News viewers, so did you go to Newsmax or OANN or whatever? But you know, Paul Ryan's on the board. Rupert Murdoch was getting out of the way, and they got rid of Tucker Carlson. Have you gone back to Fox yet? Because Fox right now, I mean, they are at least, they're hitting back on this stupid Alito narrative with the flags, and they're really hitting Biden hard every day. Real hard. Now, historically, guys, and this is typically what we see, I think this is important. If you're media, when you have a Democrat president, that's when right-wing media sort of takes off. And it sort of took off with, well, let's start with Rush Limbaugh in the 90s when Clinton got to be president. And he had all these other outlets kind of show up, the American Spectator, the Drudge Report. Fast forward to Obama. Do you remember the Glenn Beck phenomenon? And that petered out eventually. But you saw a lot, the sky-high ratings on Fox News. With Biden, it hadn't really been that. I mean, there's kind of interesting new sites or newish site, the Daily Wire with Ben Shapiro's effort. But you wonder if the sort of the deterioration of that, just the country becoming so balkanized and we're all streaming and we're all in our own little world now. You don't see media trends like you once had. But to Fox News credit, like I said, guys, you really gotta give it to them. They are playing this Biden video on a loop. Paul Bannon says Biden getting replaced on the ballot is now assured. I don't believe it. With all due respect to my former boss, Biden's fundraiser the other night just told me that they're sticking with him for the long haul. If they were going to replace Biden with Harris or with Newsom or whoever, and they would have done so already. Number two, you would not have these Hollywood elites writing checks to Joe Biden's campaign. They would have held off until the change happened. It's kind of right-wing conspiracy land, guys. I'm not going to lie. It's not out of the realm of possibilities. I mean, Biden could have a stumble any day now and really do some self-harm and have to be replaced. But to say that this was always the plan is not the case. It's just not how the world works. Mr. Plyde, has anyone got a quote from Ted Nugent about the white buffalo? Just wondering. Josh, the T-Files, Twitter Files, was my favorite show last year. So informing. Certainly better than 60 Minutes. It was Taibbi. Yeah. I was trying to think of. It was Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss doing the Twitter Files. And it was just funny to watch these people lose their damn mind over that. Oh, this doesn't really show anything. This is shoddy journalism. Guys, we can go back over the last 20 years and just watch the disdain the media have for conservative media, the mainstream media. I deal with it every day. Talk radio, 1819 News, Breitbart. I've dealt with it for years. And where does that come from? It comes from a place. It's partisan, and it's very elitist, too. But these people who are trying to play this, like, faux elitism, they're not impressive people. They look down on guys like you. The only reason you are conservative, the only reason you would ever vote for Donald Trump, the only reason you're Republican is because you're being misled by chronic malcontents like Jeff Bohr. I have conversations with these people all the time. They went to the right schools. They had to endure like a, and they're all, the ones in Alabama are like C-minus students that went to the elite universities. But there are people who go into this racket of political journalism, and the model for the last several years, for the last few decades, has been Woodward and Bernstein. Everybody wants to take down a president. That's how you earn your Pulitzer. You don't do that anymore. You earn your Pulitzer by just being left-wing enough, apparently. When was the last time a conservative won a Pulitzer Prize? It was like a columnist for Investor's Business Daily maybe 15 years ago, or not a columnist, a cartoonist. It's been a while. But it's this elitism. Joel, just my better judgment. Good Parkside to be doing the same way CNN, MSNBC. They all ran with the Russia collusion. So what's the difference if Fox News run with it every day hard? Come on, man. Send me your English translation or your grammatical translation of whatever you were trying to convey there, Joel. Judge denies AG's brief opposing Trump gag order. So the AGs, Marshall and these other attorneys general, are not allowing that brief that Marshall participated in. Oh, wait, nope. Yeah. So anyway, I guess it's more of a gesture. I'm not going to allow that to be entered into the record. Justin Timberlake arrested for DWI. I wish I cared. Don't drink and drive. And more Biden executive action on immigration. Who's excited? Every time Biden, the stroke, he's got a pen and a telephone, and every time he does something, we're that much safer, right, ladies and gentlemen? There's a very fascinating situation up in Tennessee. You remember the shooting with the transgender individual? My friend Michael Patrick Leahy, he runs a site called the Tennessee Star, got parts of the manifesto leaked to him and published it. Now they're going after him. He runs a site kind of like 1819 News. I may try to get him on the program at some point. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Time to stand it up. Lost the one thing money couldn't buy that it never was. Cause you see, I'm a dinosaur. I should have died out a long time before. Have pity on a dinosaur.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program? What you got to do? You got to text me, and I'll respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. We're kind of in this lull right now. Oh, by the way, there is a special election today. Do y'all remember John Rogers? Yeah, he was in the Alabama House of Representatives forever. Today, there is a special election or primary election in House District 52 near Birmingham. It's one of the candidates I know real well on the Democrat side. I worked with him at one point during my brief construction career up in Birmingham. But we'll see if that is. It's kind of interesting to watch. Democratic Party politics in Alabama, maybe not quite as relevant as it once was. Oh, by the way, text line 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the program. You just you text me. Also on the list, the tickets for this are outrageous up in Birmingham. Rickwood Field, kind of this old, was a ballpark, was in the Negro Leagues in the early part of the last century, but they're bringing back a Major League Baseball game to Birmingham. They've been doing this for years with their Field of Dreams, everybody like inspired by the weird Kevin Costner movie. But they'll have a kind of a game in an unconventional setting. And this year it's Rickwood up in Birmingham, where the Barons played for years. Then eventually they moved to Hoover. Now they're back in Birmingham there in Regents Bank Ballpark. But the Rickwood is going to host the San Francisco Giants and the St. Louis Cardinals. Willie Mays from Birmingham played for the Giants, not going to be in attendance. But notable development there. Demolition of the Baldwin County Beach Expressway toll plaza. How many of you been across that bridge since the toll's gone away? I've been a few times. It still kind of slows down there. I don't know if it's just because the road does go from four to two lanes, but it even slows down coming across the bridge back north. That route, they're doing a lot of work on it. It looks like to me they got to make some adjustments to it before they can sign it as an Alabama state highway. Probably widen the shoulders. Some of the grading, it probably isn't up to whatever the standard ought to be. It was a road built by a private company so that they could cut corners. And I always thought that's why you saw so many accidents going along there on the Foley Beach Express, the way it kind of turns and the grading on it. But it's going to be State Highway 161 when it's all said and done from there to Buc-ee's. Meanwhile, closer to Mobile, you're still waiting on a ball on the I-10 situation. And to be honest, the Illinois State has a lot of good answers right now. Kay Ivey kind of running out of steam late in her governorship. I wrote about this for Lanyap this week. Should be out tomorrow night. They've got to stop doing construction management in government. In a world where Joe Biden is president, in a world where we had COVID-19 and the federal government decided to just dump a bunch of money into the economy, how did you not see this runaway inflation coming and thinking that construction management, which could be held hostage by an inflationary circumstance, was a good way to go? Should have learned that when he tried to bond it, Governor. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Carry on, sweet southern comfort, carry on.
To the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me. Still to come, about an hour from now, we'll talk to my friend, chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. We'll talk to John Wall. But joining us now on the line, from Birmingham, regular on this program, always grateful for his time. We got Paul DeMarco with us. Paul, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Hope you and your listeners are well on this Tuesday morning.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. So, I want to kick it off here and you could kind of explain to you and I were talking about this. I found Joyce Vance, who's a wealth of legal disinformation, teaches law at the University of Alabama, has been out there talking about this. But it looks like initially Lawrence Tribe, the other TV judge, or legal scholar, I should say, started this conversation. He said, right, Trump appointee Judge Lylesburg just issued an unexpected extreme order last Friday. This was back in May 17th, demanding that several of the lawyers turn over Q&A document protected by a attorney-client privilege by 5 p.m. on Monday, essentially one business day later, or face monetary sanctions and being taken into custody. His conduct warrants a close look by the 11th Circuit. And then Vance adds, very unusual proceedings in Alabama. A judicial inquiry into conduct by lawyers for trans plaintiffs certainly bears scrutiny. Big hearing tomorrow at the Vance Courthouse in Birmingham, and this was back in May 27th. But for our listeners, this is a big deal. But explain to us, like, judge shopping, and really, what is the issue here, and how these things get set in motion, if you could.
Well, yeah, this is very serious stuff. I mean, DEFCON 5, and there will, from the legal community in this perspective, and you've got a very well-respected judge, United States District Court Judge Lyles Burke, conducted his hearing, and it's based on a report by three other very well-respected judges from the state of Alabama, who are based in Alabama. They're federal judges, federal United States District Court judges. So this is very serious. And so for anybody to kind of downplay this, that itself is troubling because, you know, the judge will make the final decision on what or what does not happen. I have no opinion on that. But this has to be taken very seriously because this investigation was not just by anybody. It was by three very well-known, experienced, respected federal judges. And you asked about judge shopping. So let's put aside from the current case. I mean, you know, basically it's somebody files a lawsuit and look, this was taken up in tort reform in Alabama, actually years ago, when someone might say, well, we're going to file a lawsuit in one county, but, oh, wait a second. I mean, there's no question places like Greene County are considered more plaintiff-oriented jurisdiction than a place like Baldwin County or Shelby County. And so you'd have instances of class action lawsuits or some sort of something that said, well, we're going to file it in this county because we find that we think this county is going to be more favorable for our clients. When it comes to judges, you know, it could be the same thing. You know, those are usually randomly assigned. But I know there was an instance in state court, I'm not talking about this case before the judge right now, where, you know, I was told that one attorney would, in a circuit in the state, would wait, somehow figure out when, despite random assignment, when a certain judge would get a case, or maybe there was a rotation, so this judge always got it. So everybody kind of knew that. And, you know, that disturbs the judicial process. Everybody should get a fair, you don't want one side feeling like they're getting an advantage over another when it comes to the judge that is being picked. And so venue shopping, judge shopping is obviously not just frowned upon, but it hurts the basis of our judicial system if one side feels like they're getting an advantage over the other. So that's why these types of issues are so important and critical, and obviously in an issue with this, why it has been brought to the forefront and where we are, where there's going to be these hearings next week.
Well, explain to us this, and I should know this answer, but I don't. Like, typically you file a lawsuit. How is the judge who presides over that lawsuit typically determined?
Randomly assigned. If you file a lawsuit, and we'll speak to the federal court.
Well, now, let me revise my question. When you say randomly assigned, like does that occur?
Yeah, the judges have nothing to do with the assignment. If Jeff Core were to go to the federal courthouse and file a lawsuit in the Southern District, United States District Court, United States of America, it would be randomly assigned to a judge by the clerk. Every court has a clerk, and the clerk is responsible for managing all the documents, managing the dockets and what gets filed and where it goes. But a lawsuit comes in, you don't get to pick your judge. The clerk's office stamps it in, and then we'll get randomly assigned to a judge if it's a brand new case. And now if it's some case that there was already a lawsuit, that there is a, you know, it's under the same facts, like there was a car wreck and then somebody else was involved in that same car wreck, those might be consolidated. But if it's a different lawsuit, I mean, if brand new lawsuits, they get randomly assigned by the clerk's office.
And if you do object to the judge,
pick your judge.
Well, if you do object to the judge, I mean, can you challenge that? What do you do?
Well, from the very beginning, you have to disclose, you know, information about the parties to ensure that there might not be some sort of conflict based on, I mean, you know, if a judge himself or herself were to say, I cannot take this case because of some conflict, you know, maybe this was a case involving, you know, some company or something that has some tie to the judge. The judge could recuse themselves, or a party might ask for recusal if there's some sort of legitimate conflict based on, you know, some relationship to the judge. That's a legitimate, but not based on the merits of the case.
Well, like you look at the New York Trump trial and that judge, who has all these Democratic Party ties, giving money to Democratic candidates, didn't quite meet the grounds for that kind of recusal in their eyes, in the state of New York's eyes, apparently. I mean, what is the bar? Is it into Canada judicial ethics? Like, where does that?
I mean, it'd be some sort of personal conflict that this judge, because of a personal conflict, could not handle a case. Not the merits of the case.
And you see Supreme Court justices, right? Right now, they're trying to, I think it's a political effort to try to get Alito and Judge Thomas to step out of these J6 cases, which I think they're going to ultimately, the left's going to lose on these. But, like, this is the new, we have a shifting standard. And I think what it is, Paul, is just, there's a lot of confusion out there about what exactly the ground rules are for judges.
Well, look, if I can for a second, what's going on with Justice Alito and Justice Thomas? These attacks on these two judges is just a complete disgrace. We know what it's about, there's a conservative majority on the United States Supreme Court. You don't have an activist court, and because of that, the senators like Durbin and Whitehouse and others, they're doing everything they can. And then these disgraceful recordings that were made of these two justices, try to get them recused, and they shouldn't recuse themselves because, again, this isn't what you speak of when you think of a recusal, like a personal, if a judge had a, you know, work for a company and one of the companies is a defendant or had a family member or some personal ties, not because of something like they're trying to do there. Oh, this is a conservative judge. No, that's not what a recusal is about. And I've never seen a recusal based on that. It's always some specific reason. I mean, about those recusals. So yeah, there's a lot of talk about it, about recusals of judges, but it's got to be on a very specific personal basis where a judge may recuse themselves or a party may ask or discuss, you know, about an issue of recusal. You just don't see it that often. It does not happen.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a real high bar for something like that to have to happen, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's it would take a lot for a judge to recuse himself on a very specific basis that usually does not happen. That's very unusual. I mean, I'm trying to think in my years of law practicing, it doesn't happen that often.
Joined by Paul DeMarco here on the program. Paul, let's move on to something different here. David Bronner, who, for whatever reason, we had to, like, bow in reverence to for his financial wizardry, which I'm very skeptical of. Anyway, in his newsletter, he publishes these essays, and I don't know how he gets away with it, I'll never know, but he does. And he wants a special session because gambling was it was so close last time. We could just get over the finish line this time. One vote away. Need Ivy to call a special session. Probably not going to happen, is it?
No, for several reasons. First, there's only one individual can make that decision. It's Governor Ivy. What in the for either legitimate, political, pick your poison, why in the world would Governor Ivy call a special session on gambling? I mean, people would be like, why are you doing this? They just spent 4 months. They didn't pass it. What benefit? And again, we've talked about it. If you're going to go to the effort to call a special session and bring, the 35 senators and 105 state representatives back to Montgomery, the only issue at this point would be public safety, the plague on violence happening across Alabama. That would be the only legitimate reason to bring folks back to Montgomery before they come back next February. But gambling, this is David Bronner, I think, just playing to his base and putting in his newsletter, hey, I didn't get you those raises I told you that you should have, and so let's have a special session to get gambling. But did you hear any talk about using in this money for what he's asked for anyway?
No, not at all. I mean, well, there was talk about putting it into the general fund, but I assume that it was done in the name of prisons because they got prison problems coming up. We'll get to that in just a moment. But, Paul, it's like they don't have the votes for gambling. They've lost votes since they signed and died. And Sam Gavan brings up such a good point. Now, I guess with the conference report, they had to go with the vote, but in caucus, they won't have a majority of Republicans on gambling. It's a non-starter now.
Well, and again, whether they had passed it or not, I mean, it was not going to be used for this. So to call a special session, can you imagine the public? We're going to have a special session where we bring all these legislators back to pass it so that this money will go for this one issue despite all the other issues out there. And I'm not saying, you know, getting into the issue about retirement pay or whatever, but that's not going to happen. It's a 0% chance there's going to be a special session on gambling. And if gambling were to come back, and it could be 4 years from now, it's not going to be all plugged in to go to this one specific issue when everybody else has got their hands out for other important issues, like you talk about prison construction.
The prison construction is just fascinating to me. And you and I talked about this for years. And I remember being in Washington, D.C., and you and I on the phone talking at the day of the special session, what the hell are they doing here? They didn't get anything right in that special session because, and I don't know, like, I think the governor and these contractors probably played a little fast and loose with the projections to get the legislature to go along with that prison plan at the time, because now it looks like to me, Paul, that $1.2 billion that was earmarked for two prisons is only going to pay for one, and they're going to have to ask for another $1 billion to get the second prison done.
Well, here's a legitimate question that needs to come up at the next meeting. Correct me if I'm wrong, is there's talking about building the prisons, and then is it closing four, building two mega and building four? Is that right?
Closing four, yeah. The ones over in Barber County.
Well, I mean, I think the way you're looking at it now is you can't afford to close. You're going to have to make sure you have the staffing to keep those prisons up, because what we don't want to get in a situation, what are you going to do if you open up the new prisons and they don't have enough room to house prisoners? You can't be letting violent felons out on the streets. So I think they need to ask the question, are we able, or do we have the infrastructure, both the staffing to have two new prisons, but also to keep the other prisons running?
This is
that
moving,
may be outdated. But
Paul, this is moving way too slow. We went hurry up offense, called a special session 3 years ago to get these prisons online. And I am told 2026, 5 years later, the Elmore County one will be done, which seems like you could have probably have waited to the next session to do this. There wasn't a need for a special session because everything's moving so slow. But, like, we knew what was going on in the economy. And I don't buy the economic excuse for a double price doubling. But we knew it was post-COVID. We knew how much the federal government had dumped into the U.S. economy. You knew what was going to happen with prices at that moment in time. Why did they go with such a rosy forecast thinking they could get away with it? And they did get away with it, but they're going to have to go back for even more, double the money now.
Well, and I know you had that conversation with Senator Elliott, and I think all of the state representatives and senators need to look at the situation, because we cannot afford to be in a situation where there are not enough beds to house violent felons. Because what are you going to do, go back to your constituent and say, yep, you know, we made this plan, but it's not going to work. And now because of that, public safety, which is the number one responsibility of our state leaders, is going to fail.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of questions that should come up at the next. And part of it is, are we going to have to change our plan and make sure that we have enough staffing for new prisons and current prisons and not close?
Real quick, because we're running low on time, but here's, and this is going to be right up the middle to you, but we have to have another legislative session to do prisons again and ask for more money and to get people to vote for it. I guarantee you Jim Hill and Chris England and all of these guys will look for more ways to release more of these inmates out on the street. Because I think when they ask for more money, that's going to have to be built into the deal. I mean, it's just the apple seeds in those hallways. Those groups are going to try to force that into the package.
And we just saw what happened in Prattville. Somebody, a mandatory release, someone who went raped two people and then went to in Autauga County, then went to St. Clair County and murdered somebody. And that's the situation you get. No ifs, ands, or buts. That's what we have seen happen. So, and that was based on what the district attorney said was reforms. Right. He blamed it on reforms by the legislature in 2016.
They're gonna try to do it again. Mark my word. Paul, we always appreciate your time. Let's talk again soon.
Thank you, Jeff. You have a great day.
You do the same. Paul DeMarco, we'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
You got to know when to hold up. Know never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting.
Welcome back to the Jump Force Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106 is the text line. Keep them coming, guys. We always appreciate the feedback. We got a few here. Gary, I heard Hillary Clinton will be Biden's VP. I don't believe that. That would be a disaster. You need some youth on that ticket, if anything. I don't see that as an upgrade. If they get desperate, who knows? Sean, silly pieces of demolish toll plaza for $5 a piece. Pay your final toll. What would you do? Is that exactly like a conversation piece? Well, here is a piece of the toll plaza of yesteryear. Boss, I hope they have improved Rookwood back in the 80s, early 80s, while at playing at Auburn. We'd play Alabama. It was a dump back then. It's still a dump. Well, I imagine to get ready for this major league game, they have made some modifications, Boss, but it's still kind of a. It's Birmingham. Everything in Birmingham elicits that kind of response. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5, hour number 3 now underway. Thank you so much for listening. We always appreciate your participation. 251-343-0106. Text me if you got any questions, and I will respond to them to the best of my abilities. Still to come on the program, John Wall, chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. That's in about a half hour from now. Stay tuned for that. I've been... So picture it in the Fairhope Bureau here. I have two sets of three TVs, and there's two on CNN, two on MSNBC, two on Fox. It is incredible watching how many times they are playing these videos. Poor Joe Biden. Like, there's something wrong there. And they keep showing it over and over and over again. Him just wandering off. He has to put his sunglasses on. This is pay dirt for the media. They're trying to make Trump seem as if he is lost a step or two, but you don't even have a leg to stand on when it comes to Joe Biden. It's just the hypocrisy of left-wingers. There's some honest liberals left that they just believe the wrong things. But there's so much of this on the left right now, and it's going to come back to haunt them, where it's win at all cost. It's, you know, this is no longer just this is the best thing for the country. We can't, democracy's too messy the way we do it. Win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat. Might as well get that from a bumper sticker. But it's just that we're on the side of God. We're on the side of history. We're doing the right thing. And if we had to do things, we had to play the race card, we had to be dishonest, we had to demagogue, then so be it. True believers see it that way. So that's where this the White House is coming into this sort of situation where they're saying these videos are have been altered. It is just they're going after Fox News and calling them viral videos and trying to downplay this just some kind of silly internet thing. Political communication 101. Do what you got to do to win. It's so obvious. It's unfortunate, but all roads lead to this point here, ladies and gentlemen. Done in bad faith. The thing where Obama had to come save him is that's the one. I mean, people know what they see. They know when something is wrong. There's something wrong here. And to be told there is nothing wrong, this is fake, is not going to work. I'm telling you, I think this stuff of these Biden episodes are potentially as hazardous, if not more hazardous, than Donald Trump's felony conviction. Now, what they've done, this is where they made their mistake. If you just shut up about it, maybe it goes away. They've chosen to pick a fight about this with Fox News and other media outlets. We're now just determined to show that these things are real. They're going to go out of their way to prove that they're not lying, that these aren't altered. And they're going to play these over and over again because if somebody calls you a liar and you know you're not lying. No, Biden and Trump aren't the same age, unnamed texter. Maybe Google that. But you call someone a liar, you question their integrity, you make a scurrilous accusation that Biden's follies, the video that's out there, them are altered. It's curtains. I mean, no one is buying it. This was something the White House, the Biden campaign was going to have to deal with at some point. That Joe Biden could hide in the basement during a pandemic. He's not able to hide in the basement this time around. They should have gone with a different nominee. Some of you keep saying you think it's going to change. There is a belief within Democratic Party politics right now that only one man can beat Donald Trump. And because the woke left has, they've just kind of commandeered the Democratic Party. And so it's got to be a woman. It's got to be a transgender. It's got to be somebody from the LGBTQ community. It's got to be, it's got to check a box. Everything has to do with all this identity politics. And while they won't admit it, the identity politics stuff doesn't really work in a wholesale mainstream America sense. So that's why you wound up with Joe Biden to begin with. He just plays the role, fills the part of president. Barack Obama was a once in a generation type politician who overcame a lot of barriers. Joe Biden was just there when they got past Iowa, New Hampshire. The party elders in the Democratic Party called in and said, "Hey, you're not going to be the nominee. Sorry, thanks for playing. You can make this easy on yourself, or you can make it hard on yourself," to Peter Buttigieg and all the other participants. With Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in 16, "You're not going to be the nominee." Bernie tried to fight it. He lost. But the call came down, and they believe, guys, that Joe Biden is the only person who can beat Donald Trump. They don't see any alternative. Now, maybe they're starting to regret that at this moment right now in the Democratic Party. But at the time, in 2019, Biden was seen as the only viable option. All of the others where either one of these backbenchers are the token whatever. And they got the South Carolina primary in early 2020 and said, because, guys, you go back to Iowa in 2020, the Democratic caucus was a disaster. None of the technology they had worked right. It was why there was this big push to take the Iowa caucuses away from Iowa, do another place first for Democrats to choose a nominee. But Biden did not do well there, and he didn't do well in New Hampshire. But the party elders said the country's just not ready for a gay president yet. Now you have 4 years of incumbency, and they weren't able to talk Biden out of it. This is the path they have chosen. This is what they're stuck with, and they're in trouble. It was going to happen eventually. But these questions about Biden's health aren't going to go away like they think they are. They can just dismiss them as Russian propaganda or whatever it is the hell they do. It is not going to work. I am telling you, these people are crazy to think that. You ever notice, like, the liberals who text into this show, it's like, oh, well, they never defend Biden on the merits of the discussion. It's always, what about Trump? What about Trump? What about Trump's health? Trump looks like he's a lot better shaped than Biden. And he's not wearing a, like, T-shirt that says, I'm a convicted felon. Biden, on the other hand, is doing things, very abnormal behavior, to suggest there's a problem there. And he, I don't know how they get it together, if it's even salvageable at this point. But it is troubling because he's president, fair enough. But the real trouble here with a lot of this is, like, they don't have a good answer to it. They're in trouble politically. Brandon writes, no way Biden is a nominee at DNC. I don't think he will make the debate. They are playing with fire here. I mean, they're going to try to inject a bunch of vitamin B12 into him or whatever. Many thins and no dos. It is a gamble, guys. The country's going to see a difference. Trump just has to, he can't overdo it. He's got to be cool. He's got to look competent. He can work in a shot or two. The thing about Trump and not doing the debates, every time he got on the debate stage with that field of Republican candidates, he looked like he was the sharpest. He did it in a way mocking them. I mean, people laughed at the nicknames he would give people, and they were intimidated by him. Why they went with CNN, you always got to worry about CNN being a bad actor here. Dirt Digger, most expensive nursing home in the United States is the White House. Look at Joe. People around him are doing a poor job. Yeah, they got a reeling man. Whenever he doesn't have his handlers around, which is a lot of these photo ops, is when he goes off course. Pat, as bad as Biden is, could you even imagine Bernie winning back then? What would the country look like under Bernie Sanders? Mr. Plot. Hillary could whip Trump if the Russians stayed out of it. What a trust first act as president should be to relieve all the 51 people who signed the bogus letter of their national security clearances. They should have any clearance to, they shouldn't have any clearance to butter popcorn at a movie theater. Paul, do you think Biden will actually debate? I mean, they're trying to do the do you think Trump will actually debate thing. I don't know. I assume at this point, I mean, he's committed to it. And they may regret this in hindsight. But at the time, pre-Trump conviction, Biden was so far down in the polls, they knew they were in trouble. They had to agree to a debate. Or who knows if Biden even was they saying, hey, don't say you'll do the debate. Did Biden kind of starts freelancing and doing his own thing? Big Edis, Big Mike, Obama is going to be the dark horse Democratic nominee. You heard it here first. But you mean Michelle Obama? I doubt it. I don't think she wants it. My name, Texter. Do you think this you and I think this is why they're having the debate so early, so they could change Biden out if they needed, they can. I think all of that stuff is conspiracy. I would be open to it if the checks weren't coming in for Joe Biden. If he wasn't fundraising, then I would say, yeah, they're probably going to make the switch. But he continues to raise a lot of money. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
First class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant.
Oh, mama, can this really be? And to be stuck inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues again. Mona,
welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show. If a call, 1065. Text line 251-343-0106. We'll get to the couple of texts there in just a moment. A programming note come up on tomorrow's program. State Senator Will Barfoot will be joining us. He's the Senate sponsor of a bill that would pave the way for the state to be able to intervene in failing police departments and change out the leadership and get things back on track. So in Montgomery, this is what really is the push behind this. In Montgomery, there's some problems there. When Stephen Reed took over, he brought in a police chief from outside. I mean, he's trying to do things his way, but morale suffered, and you have all these vacancies. They're short-staffed in Montgomery. People just don't want to work in that police department. It's been wokeified. So, like, down the street, the sheriff's department has all of his positions filled. And Reed Ingram and Will Barfoot see this as, well, it's just bad leadership at the city level, and they won't do the right thing. We're going to come in and fix it for you. Now, you know, we'll get into what the metrics are and what needs to be done and how you would even go about doing something like this tomorrow with State Senator Barfoot. Also on the program, Joey Clark, speaking of Montgomery, will be with us and a guest to be named later, so please tune in for that. Let's go to the text line. So if they need to change Biden out, they can. In theory, yeah. Somebody would have to, like, here's the problem with doing that. As far out on the limb, as steeped in this virtue of democracy and the people's vote as the Democratic Party is, to go and change the nominee at the last minute after the duly elected nominee, who overwhelmingly won his primaries, is removed, it would be seen as a move against democracy. You guys, like, think about everything they've been saying for the last 4 years about democracy. Democracy! And they've perverted the system of government that's in the U.S. It's not a democracy, right? It's very strange what they've done, but I am telling you, ladies and gentlemen, that I think they're too staked out on the will of the people and the vote of the people to make a change at this point. I just don't think they can pull that off without taking some hits. It's going to look very Charlie Graddick, circa 1986 if they try to do that. And there will be a backlash against that. If they decide to, now Biden could go willingly, but I still think it's problematic. Now, we'll see. Toothless Bammer, did you see Colin Cowherd's 2 minutes about Trump and his friends who are all felons? I saw on Twitter. I've been keeping track of old Colin Cowherd that much lately. Occasionally when I go eat lunch, somebody, one of the sports channels will be on, and there he is. Tim, Jeff, I've dealt with the same thing, family members. And once it starts happening, it progresses rapidly. Biden no way should be qualified to be president. But they don't want to admit it. I agree. I mean, the conditions on the ground are deteriorating. And maybe this is Democratic Party wisdom. I think if a change happens, it's going to be after. It'll be after Biden is elected. And then you'll have the vice president, Harris. But she'll just be a figurehead. She'll just be a puppet. She'll just do whatever she's told. And it'll be the same people. Because is Biden calling the shots right now? No. And if Kamala Harris is president, she won't be calling the shots either. But she can't get elected. Biden can, they think. They think that. They got some real problems ahead. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. I still have-